You all know that I've always felt the 9 most terrifying words in the English language are, I'm from the government and I'm here to help.
Thank you guys for choosing Weekly Politics as your podcast today. And I've never talked about my ideas on immigration ever, I don't think, on this podcast. And I decided, I was actually debating whether or not I should talk about immigration or whether I should go on and talk about Vivek Ramaswamy, because I know I mentioned him in my last episode on who's running in 2024, but he's a really interesting figure. I did some more research on him, and I thought, you know, he deserves an episode, so I'll talk about him some other time, probably next week. On the other hand, this is a really big issue going on immigration. It's not something that's going through Congress or anything like that, but it's something that should be going through Congress, something that we need to focus on more and more. As you guys all know, the media, Republican side media anyway, will not stop letting you know that Biden has let a record number of illegal immigrants into the country quite a bit. As in 2022, record number, 2023 is probably going to be another record number. The year isn't over, so we don't know yet, but you understand the point. And so I thought, why don't I just talk about immigration, explain what I believe on immigration, why I believe it, and which politician actually goes best with my beliefs, whether it's Republican or Democrat. And so let's get into it. So let's go to the history real quick. American immigration. We're a nation built mostly completely on immigrants, right? The first immigrants came from Europe, whether they were from Holland, Great Britain. A lot of the pilgrims were from Great Britain, I believe. Then they went to Holland or the Netherlands. And then they went to the United States, into a colony, and started another colony there. And over time, these immigrants from Europe started building 13 different colonies. So mostly these colonies were British colonies, right? Britain would send colonists over, and they would colonize the United States within, well, whether it's in Delaware or Delaware or Virginia, you get the point. The idea is just that mostly Britain, these European nations would send colonists over and they would colonize. And that was the first immigration, right? These people would come from one land to another land. That's the definition of immigration. And I would say it happened instantly. Like, the instant this happens, you start seeing naturalized births. So colonists having children inside the colony, that would be a naturalized birth. And obviously this happens instantly, and I'll get to why this is extremely important in a second here. But immigration, it's been with us since the beginning of our country. We are built on immigration. Immigration is necessary for our nation to survive. So like I said, 13 colonies were formed by immigration completely. United States as a nation has a massive history of immigration after the United States was formed even. So on July 1868, the 14th Amendment was signed. Well, ratified. You don't really sign amendments, you ratify them. The 14th Amendment was ratified. And what this did is it said, if you are born in the United States, you are now a U.S. citizen. That is what the 14th Amendment said, and it's quite an interesting amendment because I understand where it comes from. I love the 14th Amendment, and I agree with it. What I'm going to say here is that I believe the 14th Amendment was only made so that black people could become American citizens without any loopholes, and that's a good thing, right? I'm just saying I think that was the only reason why, and it just has a whole bunch of other good reasons good things that it also accomplished in the process of accomplishing that one good thing. So for example, I was born in the United States. Because of that, I don't need to own land. I don't need to have American tattoos to be an American citizen. I simply am an American citizen. I have a social security number. I have a permanent residency. I pay taxes. I am an American citizen, quite literally, because I was born in the United States. For many other people, this is true as well. I mean, if you're born in the U.S., you're, like I said, you're an American citizen. There's no exception, as far as I know. And that's what the 14th Amendment does. So if you're an Asian, you're born in America, you're an American citizen. Even if you have Asian ethnicity, you're still an American citizen. Here's the interesting part. If you're an Indonesian, your parents are Indonesian, and you're born in the United States, you now have dual citizenship, because Indonesia, the way they make you a citizen is if you're born from someone else who's a citizen. So if my parents were Indonesian, even though they live in America, hypothetically, if they were Indonesian, I would be both American and Indonesian because my parents are Indonesian. It's kind of strange. Some nations do it where if you're born there, you're a citizen. Other nations do it where if you're born from someone who is a citizen, then you are also a citizen by blood. But yeah, it's super interesting. That would also explain why some nations look like they have a bunch of people, even though they technically don't. I mean, for example, Indonesia has over 100 million citizens. How many of those citizens actually live in Indonesia? I would say maybe. So they have 120 million people. So I would say maybe 110 actually live there. 110 million. I mean, it's fine. It's super interesting. I love learning about this stuff because of how interesting it is. But it's, yeah. It works, right? I mean, America does it differently. We do. If you're born here, you're a citizen, which is one of the biggest reasons why immigration is how, well, is as big of a issue, I want to say, as it is right now. So American immigration continued to grow. Obviously, 1868, if you're born here, you become a citizen. That is when immigration into the United States really started to become popular. Because, hey, I no longer have to get a tattoo or own land to become an American citizen. I just simply have to have my kids born there. And that's why families started moving from Europe, from Mexico, from Canada, from all over the world to the United States. Because all they had to do was have their kids born there. When their kids are born there, their kids become citizens and they have a better life for their kids. That was the idea. And especially in the late 1800s is when America's economy really became as big, like extremely big. I don't know if it was the biggest economy in the world, but it was definitely in the top three. And that was the early 1800s. And it definitely was the biggest economy in the world by 1920, or sorry, 1929. When 1929 came around, obviously the stock market crashed, but it still remained the largest economy in the world. And it still is the largest economy in the world to this day, which means it's been over 100 years since. Yeah, it's been over 100 years since we've been basically the biggest economy in the world, which is quite fascinating when you think about it. But there were multiple large waves of immigration, which brought up more anti-immigration laws. So if we're looking at immigration and what I believe, I really just have to explain to you the history and everything, which is what I'm trying to do. But anti-immigration laws, I'm not going to call it xenophobic, by the way. There's people on the left and even Republicans, they're just like, oh, you're xenophobic because you don't like immigration. Or, no, you're transphobic because you don't like transgenderism. Or, you're homophobic because you're not okay with gay marriage. You don't even understand what the word phobia means if that's what you're going around saying. Phobia is literally a fear of something. I'm not afraid of gay people. I'm not afraid of trans people. I'm not afraid of immigrants. I'm not afraid of any of that. But yeah, I get called all that stuff all the time, and it's kind of stupid. Why would you call me names? Are you trying to accomplish something? Or are you just trying to insult me? I'm really confused right now. If you call me a transphobe, do you really think I'm afraid of transgenderism? And you might say, well, yeah, because you're afraid of what it could do. Okay, well, if that's your logic, then let's look into that for a second. What would happen if Republicans and only Republicans, extreme, mega Christian Republicans, ran the country? I can almost guarantee you anyone who would call me phobic anything would disagree with that. Why? Is it because they're afraid of what's going to happen? Are they Republican phobic? Oh my gosh, are they Christian phobic? That's so terrible. Do you see how bad that logic is? I'm not transphobic, I'm not homophobic, I'm not xenophobic. I'm not afraid of anyone. Just to make that straight. Also, my immigration views, and most people would definitely not consider xenophobic. We'll get to that later. But again, this is when anti-immigration laws started, or what the Democrats would call xenophobic laws. They're not xenophobic. I don't like the laws, but they're not xenophobic. And what they really did is that they started limiting how many immigrants can come to the United States and how many from each nation per year. That's how it started. So if you're from Ireland, maybe you could only have, oh, 70,000 immigrants per year from Ireland. Maybe. 100,000 from Mexico per year, maybe. Those aren't official numbers. I'm just giving you an idea of what it could look, or what it probably looked like in 1898, because that's what the laws did. They limited the number of immigrants from each country, and then they limited immigrants as a whole as well. And that's just how it started. By the way, the wall, the idea of having a wall, has been around for ages. I mean, before, and I think it was the mid-1800s, some people were like, we should build a wall to keep the Catholics out. And that makes no sense, right? To keep the Catholics out? That's a religion. You can't keep a religion out with a wall. That makes no sense. But okay. And then the next thing was, we should build a wall to keep the Chinese out. And that also makes no sense because they're across the world. They don't border on lands. A wall wouldn't work. It made no sense. And now it's, we should build a wall to keep the Mexicans out. And I'll get to that later and what I think about that. So, like I said, a lot of anti-immigration laws and a lot of dumb ideas started floating around this time. And it's really just, when you look at it from today and you think, wow, our immigration laws have changed quite a bit. You're right, they have changed quite a bit, but not necessarily in a good way. The way it should change is way different than the way it has been changing. So today, there are around 1.5 million immigrants in the U.S. per year. So what this means is 1.5 million immigrants. It doesn't mean that 1.5 million people cross the border legally and get a permanent residency. It means that 1.5 million people who already have lived in the United States for 4 years and done all of the paperwork to become a citizen have officially became U.S. citizens. That's what it means. So the American views on immigration are fairly interesting. They could not be any more polar opposite than they already are. So I'll start with the, well, I'm a Republican. You guys all know this, right? I'm a Republican. I actually don't agree with most of Republican views on immigration. And you might find that surprising because I actually agree with the majority of what Republicans say. But when it comes to immigration, I definitely don't agree with them on most points. So those who enter the nation illegally, they have no incentive to obey any American laws because the government doesn't know who you are or where you are. That is one Republican view on immigration, and that's true. I agree with that, but I disagree on how to deal with that. So Republicans are like, hey, when you enter the nation illegally, first of all, we'll start with number one. When you enter the nation illegally, in order for you to get a job, you either need to steal someone else's identity so that you can get paid minimum wage without anyone taking advantage of you, which is, again, against the law. You're completely destroying someone's life, which is terrible. Or you have to accept lower than minimum wage payment or lower than what you're worth payment, which is also terrible, which is why I highly suggest immigrating legally, not illegally. So illegal immigration, it isn't good. Ethically speaking, morally speaking, anything speaking. Also, by the way, if you're an illegal immigrant, you have no incentive to obey the law. And you might say, well, technically you do, because if you disobey the law and get caught, then you'll get deported. And you're right. If you disobey the law and you get caught, you'll get deported. But you won't get caught. I mean, when you're driving on a road, you're going to be driving 55 miles an hour. Whenever you're doing something in plain sight, in plain public sight, you're going to have to obey the law. But as soon as you're not in plain public sight, you're not an American citizen. You don't have to pay taxes. You don't have to do any of this other stuff because no one knows who you are or where you are. I mean, government doesn't know who you are or where you are. Why on earth would you pay taxes? They can't tax you. To them, you don't even exist. That's what illegal immigration basically is. So I don't agree with Republicans when they say, oh no, illegal immigrants are going to destroy the country and destroy the economy. I mean, they could, but you would need quite a bit. You would need like 30 million illegal immigrants every single year, and every single one of those illegal immigrants would have to steal a social security number, and then they would destroy the country and destroy the economy. I mean, it takes quite a bit to do that. Especially in America, where we have 334 million Americans. But you understand what I'm saying? I'm despised illegal immigrant. I love immigrants, like, as a brother and sister, honestly. But illegal immigration, it's not okay. It needs to stop. And so I'll get into how we can potentially limit it as much as physically possible later. But that's my view on illegal immigration. So immigration is a major reason the U.S. population is still growing today, and the population of the United States needs to continue growing. I'll just say that right now. And I'll talk more about that in other episodes this week, hopefully, but we'll leave it there. So immigration, the United States has a birth rate of around 1.64, which means every single married or every single person, how do you describe it? Basically, every single family, a married couple, has 1.64 children. You need two for replacement level. And if you have two for a replacement level, then that means that when your two parents die, obviously, you have two kids and they take up your spot. And then you have replacement level and it's going to continue. And it'll actually grow a tiny little bit because people live to around 80 years old and it just overdoes itself. You get the point, though. Because people have children at age 20 and they die at age 80, which means actually during that time in your family, there's about six people born. Not necessarily from you, but from you and your kids. So the population still grows at a birth rate of around 2, but a birth rate around 1.64, the population doesn't grow. And it actually starts to shrink a little bit. Not by much, but a little bit. And when you have the population shrinking a little bit, that's not good. Because, well, obviously, I'm going to actually get into this in the economic one. I can't get into it on this one without spoiling the economic episode. It's actually, the economic one I have, it's going to be really interesting. I'll just say it this way. If the United States population shrinks, then that means that the social values of the United States as a whole are declining. The value of the family is declining. The value of getting married is declining. The value of having children is declining. The value of actual biblical love and joy is declining. That's not good. So if the value of a family is high, then what you're going to see is a lot of people in high school getting relationships, going to college, sticking with relationships, graduating college, getting a nice career, getting married, having children, raising those children well within the name of the Lord, and then going up. That's what you're going to see. That's amazing. If you need proof of that, look at the 1980s. I'm not saying the United States population was growing amazingly in the 1980s, which it was growing, but not as well as I could have been. But in the 1980s, the value of the family was really high. Now, I actually like the 80s a lot, because in the 80s, what you would see is families and Americans. I mean, yeah, there were Republicans, there were Democrats, and yes, they would disagree and yell at each other sometimes, but we could actually come to a common ground and be like, hey, we are American. That's what we could do. I wish we could still do that. It'd be amazing what we could get done if we could still do that today. So the population, like I said, needs to continue. And there's quite a few more purposeful reasons I can get into. I said I'll get into it Wednesday with the economic episode. I might actually add some more Friday, which is the military episode. It depends. Democrats. Let's talk about the Democrats' view. They don't seem to have any consistent view on immigration. And it's really interesting because they're the people that are like, yeah, I love immigration, have all the immigrants, but they actually don't have a view on it. That's all they say. They're just like, oh no, you can't deport people. That's not good. It's not ethical. No, don't do that. And they don't have any basis. I mean, they say deporting people isn't ethical. I have a counter argument for that. Leaving them in the United States where they're going to break laws and potentially steal social security numbers and ruin people's lives isn't ethical. Or leaving them in the United States where they get underpaid because they don't have a social security number so that they can barely even raise enough money for their family. That's not ethical. Deporting them and allowing them to re-enter the country legally, that is ethical. Keeping them in the country where they will actually suffer from it isn't ethical. There, that's the ethics part solved. So they believe immigration is good. We have that done. But they don't know how to regulate it. That's the problem. And yes, regulation is necessary when it comes to immigration. Because let's look at it this way. There were about 2.76 million illegal immigrants in 2022. Remember at the beginning of the episode when I said 1.5 million legal immigrants in 2022? Or 2022? Yeah. Not legal immigrants, but legal new citizens based on immigrants in 2022. That means that there's more illegal immigrants every single year than there are of actual legal migrants becoming citizens every single year. That's a problem. That's a big problem. These people will benefit when they are in the U.S., but I would like them for them to be here legally. So when I say, though, that illegal immigrants will benefit from being in the U.S., I mean, they're going to be underpaid, right? But the underpay is still more than what they made in Mexico. The average wage, the average wage in Mexico is actually around $8,000 a year, but the GDP per capita is around $10,000, but it doesn't matter. Let's say the average wage is $8,000 a year. Out of those $8,000 a year, they could make maybe $12,000 a year, even while getting underpaid in the United States. it will take them a while. They have to work extremely hard, but they could. So technically, that is better off than they were in Mexico. Plus, things in the United States tend to be cheaper. Electronics are cheaper, TVs are cheaper, cars are cheaper, gas is actually cheaper. Everything in the United States is cheaper because it's built on mass production, not, well, it isn't necessarily built on that mass production in Mexico. It's also easier to import things in the United States than it is in Mexico because of fewer laws. You get the point. It's basically, you benefit in the United States, but it's still unethical to be here illegally because you couldn't, you're not benefiting as much as you could be. And I'll explain real quick. The average wage in the United States is around $72,000, $73,000 per year. That is the average individual income in the United States. If you're here illegally and you're getting paid $12,000 a year, that means you're underpaid by around $60,000-ish. If you were here legally, you could be getting paid $73,000-ish per year instead of that $12,000. It is unethical to be here illegally. So another thing Democrats do is they tend to complain quite a bit when Republican states who actually, Republican states, by the way, do suffer a lot from crime. Remember when I said that when you come here illegally, you have no incentive to actually obey the law? It's even worse when you're right by the border. So for example, El Paso in Texas, El Paso is a city of about 40,000 people. They see, I don't remember what the exact numbers, I think it was double their population of illegal immigrants go through their city every single year within the last 3 years. That's not good. That's not good at all. And these people, since they're right by the border, they have almost nothing to lose. They get deported right back across the border, they just walk back over again. I mean, that's not exactly how it works, but you understand the point I'm saying, though. They're going to break more laws than the average citizen. And this is true, because look at El Paso. El Paso's mayor, who, by the way, is a Democrat, who supposedly loves immigration, talks all the time about the problem of illegal immigration and crime in El Paso, the crime caused by the illegal immigrants. That is an issue. So when these red states, like Texas and Florida, who do suffer from illegal immigration, all they do is they take a bus and they stick 50 of these immigrants and they send them to one of the richest parts of the country and drop them off there. Democrats complain about that. Why? Oh, probably because the richest part of the country happens to be full of mostly Democrats. I'm talking about Martha's Vineyard. We send 50 illegal immigrants to Martha's Vineyard and they complain. Why? Because we sent their problem to them. That's why. This illegal immigration was not the biggest problem in the world until Biden was president. I'm not saying it wasn't a problem, but it wasn't as big as it is now. And now it's worse. So we sent them their problem, and they got mad at us for it. Shows you they have a little bit of inconsistent beliefs to me. So I would say Republicans are better when it comes to immigration beliefs, but not ethically. So I'll talk about better as in they, if you're coming into the United States, they want you to come in legally so that you can get paid a lot of money. So better in that case. And that is an ethical reason. But when I talk about ethically, I mean, you'll see. So Republicans have a much more consistent view when it comes to immigration. They don't like it and they want to limit it. That is quite literally their view. They don't like immigration. They want to limit it even more. And when I say they're not better ethically, I mean, they don't like immigration. That's what I mean by not ethically. It is ethical to allow people to enter the greatest country on planet Earth. It is ethical for that. So my views on immigration, I've talked about everyone else's views. Let me explain my views on immigration, and you might be quite surprised because I'm a Republican. I'm pretty conservative. I mean, I live in Sioux County, like one of the most conservative places on planet Earth. It voted 90% Republican in the last midterm election, and I would still consider myself more Republican than most of the people here. But yeah, on my views of immigration, I am way different than most Republicans. So I love immigration. I know quite a few immigrants, and I've known them at multiple different jobs I had, mostly high school jobs, small high school restaurant jobs. So these people, they're excellent people. They came here legally, they obey the law, they do everything great, they're hard workers. They're amazing. They're American. Well, some of them are American now because they passed the citizen test. And that's incredible. This is one of the things that built America. Immigrants. America isn't just white Europeans. America's like, yeah, we've got Mexicans, we've got Canadians, we've got Europeans, we've got Africans, we've got Asians. It doesn't matter, we're all American. That's what brings us together. That's how I see it. And they're great people, and obviously law-abiding citizens obey the law because they're incentivized to obey the law, just like me and you. They obey the law because if they don't, they go to jail. They suffer from actual punishment in the United States, just like me and you would. And I'm in favor, so this is where it gets a little bit confusing. And I'll try to explain it best I can. I'm in favor of a border wall, but not necessarily a physical wall. So, I want it to be impossible to come into the United States illegally. But I want more people to come in legally. And what I'm trying to say by this is, if I can stop all illegal immigration by building a physical wall and increase legal immigration because you can no longer enter illegally, then so be it. Do it. Why not? I think it's a lot better in that way. On the other hand, I do understand some people's idea of... Well, actually, I don't understand it. I don't understand some people's idea that the wall is wrong. When you say, no, we can't have a wall because it's ethically wrong. Why is it ethically wrong? I don't want people to break the law and get underpaid. That's my view on this. If a physical wall does that, stops people from coming in illegally, then build the physical wall. So be it. It's a wall. It should not be dividing our country. And I know I'm saying this while openly supporting a wall to divide two countries. I'm not trying to divide the countries. I'm trying to say, enough of the illegal immigration, come in legally so that you can get paid well. So that you can become an American citizen. So that you can become a part of the greatest nation on planet Earth. That is what I'm saying. Please. So let's get into how we can increase immigration. Right now we have a set amount of visas, permanent visas, that we can allow per year. So there are about 675,000 permanent visas we can have. And it's quite interesting. Because 675,000 is not that much. What I think we should do is we should have multiple different positions. So when you cross a border, you go through border security, right? Let's have more of those spots. More places where you can go through border security. With a wall, by the way, with the physical wall. More places where you can cross border security, more border security in general. That way you're not... And when I say more border security, I don't mean, oh, he's going to climb the wall, shoot him. I mean, keep them away. Keep them away from the wall, point them in the right direction towards the border security checkpoints where they can legally cross into and get a temporary visa into the United States. And while they're in the United States with a temporary visa, they can apply for citizenship or apply for a permanent visa. That is what I mean. This is the best way I can think of how to do it. If you have a better idea, that's totally fine. You can let me know somehow, some way. I'm open to ideas on this. Because really, what I care about is increasing the amount of legal immigration, increasing the American population. That is what I care about. So having, well, an infinite number of permanent visas allowed would seriously help this. Also, I didn't know if you knew this, but by the way, when you're becoming an American citizen, you have to take, or well, you have to be here for 4 years, and then you have the paperwork, and then you have the test. I'm just going to openly say this. I've taken the test. It's not that hard. It's really not that hard. I've taken the American citizenship test for fun. It's not that hard at all, okay? I hear all the time people complaining about how it needs to be easier. No, it doesn't. It does not need to be any. I got two wrong, and one of them I got wrong on accident because I accidentally clicked the wrong button. So technically, I'm going to say I got one wrong. One. And other people say, well, there's so much on that test that, you know, so much on the test that you don't need to know. No, there isn't. The test talks about the Revolutionary War, which is how America was started, the American Constitution, which is what America runs on. It talks about the Civil War, which is extremely important to know. It talks about the current president and vice president, which is also extremely important to know. And it talks about basic American law. Not extreme law, like when you break into a store and steal a candy bar, which type of crime did you commit? But like a basic, very basic law. For example, I don't even know. I can't remember what some of the examples were actually. I just remember it was easy. And if it was easy, it definitely was basic law, because I don't know what types of crime that would be. The idea is, the test I like. The 4-year wait, I don't like. Make it 2 years. Have it. And I'm saying 2 years because I want you to... I don't think it takes 4 years to get used to American culture. I think it takes 2 years. After 1 year, you're like, oh, okay, I'm starting to understand this a little bit. Okay. And then 2 years is to confirm that you actually know what you're doing and you know what you're understanding, and like you understand it more and more, right? 2 years. And then you can take the test. And there's also a bunch of people out there who say, there's an argument going on. I don't know if you knew this, but there is no official language in the United States. Most of us speak English, but there's still no official language. English is not the official American language. And I'll put it this way. If you're an immigrant and you're from Mexico, I think the test should be in English. It's an interesting idea. I know. I'm just saying this because if you can't speak English and you are in the United States, it's going to be really hard for you to assimilate into the United States. Everything here, even though English is not the official language, everything here is in English. If you don't know enough English to take the test, then I don't know what to tell you. It's going to be really hard for you to live here. I mean, sure, your community can help you as much as they possibly can, but the test should be in English. And I'm not going to put up to people calling me racist for that, because I'm not racist, okay? If you're from Arabia and you speak Arabic, you should take the test in English. If you're from China and you speak, I don't know, Cantonese, is that what they call it? No. Mandarin? You should take the test in English. If you're from France and you speak French, you should take the test in English. Because in America, it's not the official language, but it's what we speak. 90-some% of Americans here speak English fluently. The majority of businesses and street signs, laws, are written in English. You need to know English. It's extremely important to know that. Everything here is written in it. That's why I think the test should be written in it, to ensure that you know enough English to get by. You don't need to be fluent. You just need to know enough to do the test. Which is, you don't need to be fluent to do that. You really don't. Okay, that's my views on American immigration. And if you guys think I'm a xenophobe for saying everything I just said, then get a life, please. And if you think I'm transphobic, get a life. If you think I'm a racist, join the club, because that's funny. I think it's funny when people think I'm racist. And what else do I have to say? I think that's about it. Yeah, I think I covered all of the phobies and racism type stuff, I guess. That's everything I have to say. Thank you guys for listening to the podcast. Last episode, you guys all noticed, I hope you noticed, if you listened to the end, it was on YouTube as well. I'm going to try to do that every once in a while. It's not going to be a recurring thing. Maybe I'll do it once a week or something just for fun. It was just an idea I had, like, why not just throw it on YouTube, have some fun with it. And, you know, it was fine. I liked it. I'll do it again sometime. I don't know when, but it was just a test. So, I hope you guys liked the episode. Subscribe on whatever platform you listen to this to, and I'll catch you all later. Adios. God bless you.